This is the best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the City of Angels. Man, do we have a lot to get you caught up on. Lee Jenkins, who wrote the piece for Sports Illustrated last time LeBron James decided to return to Cleveland, also authored a much shorter, not first person piece on LeBron James, his shortstop in Los Angeles, the Decision 3.0. He'll catch up with us here in 15 minutes. Torrey Lovullo will be our guest in the second hour of the show. That's 4:20 on the West Coast, on the East Coast, 1:20 on the West Coast. Michael Porter Jr. will join us at 5 on the East Coast, 2 on the West Coast. And Anthony Slater, who works for the Athletic Bay Area, will join us. And we'll talk about what I think everybody's reacting to, which is DeMarcus Cousins, Boogie Cousins. What's the best way to make a championship team dance? Put a little boogie in it. Anyway, DeMarcus Cousins is now a member of the Golden State Warriors. It's not just that the Warriors got him. They got him as a free agent. Only 1 year, only $5.3 million for a guy who, going into last year, was searching for max money. So there's a ton to it. Ton to it. But there is this one thing that I think you should learn to accept. There's this discussion, or maybe a point that's made, has been made to me many times over in terms of playing, but it works for you in life as well. Lots of people say they want to be great. My son is 9 years old. He says he wants to play Major League Baseball. That's great. He's left-handed. He hits right, although he can hit left, so we're going to have him hit left but more next year. He's a little young for his league this year. Throws left, obviously, plays first base, great spirit. Probably be a little small to play first base. It's probably the one thing that I would say would be working against him. Outside of that, you know, he loves the game, understands the game, and plays at a pretty high level for a kid his age. And then, you know, can you hit a major league curveball? Can you top 90 with your fastball? If you can do either of those two things, you got a legit chance. But I told him this. I was like, look, there are lots of kids who put on a jersey and say, I want to be Steph Curry. There are lots of kids that go out and throw with their dad and say, I want to be Mike Trout and Clay, or Clayton Kershaw. But are you willing to sacrifice the things on a daily basis which will allow you to take the steps to becoming the guy you ultimately want to be? And of course, like any boy, any person, absolutely. But it's not saying it, it's doing it, right? There is a certain amount of doing that has to take place in order for you to achieve your potential. And I'm sitting here looking at Kevin Durant, who won an MVP, went to an NBA Finals, was up 3-1 on the Warriors. They lost, and all I hear is, hey, Kevin Durant is soft. Kevin Durant took the easy way out. Sure, he won 2 Finals MVP and 2 Finals MVPs and 2 championships, but he had to join a 73-win team to do it. In order to land DeMarcus Cousins, Kevin Durant had to take slightly less money. About $5 million less. Now, that doesn't seem like that big a sacrifice for somebody who's already made over $100 million and is probably going to make over close to $1 billion all told by the time they're done playing basketball. Between Nike, his deal's obviously not that of LeBron, but Nike, all his other tech company stuff, investments, etc., and his various contracts. So in order to get DeMarcus Cousins, he took about $5 million less. You go back to his previous deal, and he took about $5 million less in order to land Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston when their contracts were up. Kevin Durant can be criticized all you want because he joined a team that lost in the NBA Finals. They won more games in the regular season than any team in the history of the sport. But there's two things that strike me about Durant. One is this. All these guys say they want to win a championship. Right? Most important thing to me is winning. How many times have you heard that at a press conference or on a radio in a radio interview? But to Kevin Durant, he puts winning above money. Right? Look at the Houston Rockets. Look at the Houston Rockets. Between James Harden's extension last year and Chris Paul's extension this year, both of them took every penny that they had rightfully earned. Chris Paul hadn't rightfully necessarily earned it with the Houston Rockets, but throughout his long and illustrious career as a max contract guy, that many years in the league, nobody bat an eye at the money that he's making, even though we all know that those last 2 years are probably going to be a little bit dicey. But did he have to? If winning was the most important thing, couldn't Chris Paul have taken less money to free up more money for Trevor Ariza to resign? Right? Like, all these guys say one thing. They all, it's like my son saying, hey, I want to be a Major League Baseball player. Like, okay, do you want to get up at 6 in the morning and go to the cage and hit for 45 minutes? You know, are you willing to eat right? Are you willing to do the little things? And then I look at the Golden State Warriors and I also realize that not only is their best player willing to sacrifice, but their team is, they're just smarter. DeMarcus Cousins does not come without risk. He's coming off a torn Achilles tendon. Nobody knows how he'll play this year. His attitude's never been one to which you'd model a basketball player after. And he might have a tertiary or even worse role on the offensive side of the floor. And while we say, hey, all DeMarcus Cousins wants to do is win, because if he shows he can be part of a winner, then that'll knight him for his next team, the likelihood is he's going to be, at best, a fourth option offensively. And all guys say, like, well, I'll do it if it's for winning. Let's see what happens. When you look down at the box score and you see, you know, five shots, you only make three, you only play 20 minutes, but your team wins by 15, you still going to be happy? Kevin Durant strikes me as one of the few guys who, you know, the, what is it, walks it like he talks it, practices what he preaches, and whatever cliche you want. Everybody says they're willing to sacrifice, says it's about championships. Kevin Durant, and it's not that much for him, $10 million? $10 million? But with that $10 million, they were able to get DeMarcus Cousins, Andre Iguodala, and Sean Livingston. He was willing to sacrifice a little bit of money for two titles, and maybe now three. Here's Adrian Wojnarowski trying to explain DeMarcus Cousins' situation in free agency.
The injury played a big part in depressing the market for him. The fact that there wasn't salary cap space in a lot of places. But here's a reality DeMarcus Cousins had to deal with and now has to start to rectify in Golden State. His image. There were teams with space who did not want him in their locker room, didn't want him in their organization. He's going to be sitting on the bench with Steve Kerr. He's going to be sitting there in practice and games. They're going to get to know each other. They're going to get to build a relationship before he ever steps on the court. And they think that's really important in Golden State.
I tend to agree. They have a great culture. He's going to have to buy into that culture in order to make it work. If it doesn't work, they still may be able to win without him. If he does buy in and he's 3/4 of the player he used to be, they'll be the best team, and they've improved some. There's no guarantees. He's actually worth that money. You're always worth what somebody's willing to pay. But it stuns me on how no one else seems to have pointed out, hey, this is the second time Durant has done something that other stars won't do. LeBron didn't do it in Cleveland. Melo sure as hell to have done it. Heck, even Russell Westbrook took every penny that he had earned in Oklahoma City. Everybody says, I want to win a championship. Are you willing to take $5 million less per year in order to win a championship? No, ask, get it from somebody else. Are you willing to come off the bench? Would Melo say? No. Allen Iverson, no. So I look at Golden State and I think they're willing to sacrifice more. And I think that front office is just smarter.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Lee Jenkins joins us. writes for Sports Illustrated, also a Southern California Jewish Sports Hall of Famer. I know I was there for the induction ceremony. Lee, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Doug. Your speech was the best of the day, though.
I appreciate it. I actually enjoyed yours a great deal. Online car shopping can be confusing. Not anymore with True Price from True Car. Now you can know the exact price you'll pay for your next vehicle. So visit True Car. You'll enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Lee, of course, you authored the piece when LeBron decided to go back to Cleveland. This time around, it was shorter, more concise, more professional. He flies in on Saturday. He has, under the cover of darkness, a three-hour meeting with Magic Johnson. He has breakfast in Brentwood. Dignitary stop by. Everybody wants him to pay attention. At some point in time, he comes to a conclusion, and he says, call the Lakers as he's boarding the plane to go to Europe. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's about right. I should have just written 100 words and be done with that. So I think this was probably, I know this was his lean for a while. And even early that weekend, I actually once thought it would even go faster than that. So, I think there were a lot of arrows pointing him to Los Angeles. I do wonder, as he sits there on a boat in Italy or wherever he is, how much he knew of what would come in the aftermath here and what this roster looks like now compared to the one he might have signed up for.
Okay, it's a really good question. How much say does he want in who's on this team?
I don't know. I think a lot of that in the past in Cleveland was overstated. And I know it was a popular kind of train of thought that he was the general manager, and clearly there were deals struck and players brought in who were part of Rich Paul's agency. So you could see some of the some of the influence he might have exerted, but I also think there were plenty of deals that he wasn't necessarily involved with and didn't want to be involved with. So how much of he knew of the Lakers' specific direction and specific names, I don't know. Definitely generally, I'm sure that was part of the talk he had with Magic Johnson. But, what he was sort of telling the people close to him is that this is a longer play, and that he sort of believes that the lure of the Lakers, of Magic, having that extra that cap space, having some of these young players either to develop or move, the kind of all of that gave him enough confidence that they would be able to establish something powerful, if not this coming season and subsequent seasons.
What was he most concerned about?
With the Lakers?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it was expressed to me that he wanted to sit down with Magic. He wanted to kind of look him in the eye. He wanted to, I think, talk about direction of the team moving forward. But I think it would have been very unlikely, even when he came back to L.A., even though he met with his representation met with the Sixers, for him to go another way. It seemed like that was just so much of where he was leaning. But I do, I do sort of wonder, I mean, he's 33 years old, going on 34, and even though he can profess to patience now, I do sort of wonder what it looks like for him if this team is what? When you look at this team right now, Doug, what do you see? Do you see fifth in the West? And where do you kind of put them? Because I don't know, he could say all the things he wants to say now, but in February, March, he's not really accustomed to being, on the bottom end of a conference.
Yeah. I mean, again, it does, though, depend on what are you leaving behind in Cleveland? Do we think they weren't the best team or the second best team in the East this year? And remember, yes, they beat Boston in Boston Game 7, but Boston didn't have their top two players. Like, I do think he understood that run was probably coming to an end. And I understand that some of this move was not just about basketball. But yeah, I think middle of the playoff pack is reasonable. To middle to lower end of the playoff pack. I mean, it depends upon, like everything else, injuries, cohesion. I it still feels like there's one more move that they have not made yet. And obviously that's the Kawhi move, and that would change everything. But as of now, it looks like it could be a playoff team.
Yeah, I just, his expectations, and maybe he can temper them, and maybe Lakers fans can too. But I do wonder what that experience would be like for him if it does... if it does start off the way it looks like it may, even in Miami year one, I know they didn't win the championship. It didn't go perfectly. Cleveland, certainly there were issues along the way that first regular season. But in general, those were teams very much in contention. Those were teams that made the finals. So, and I know there are also so much is made of this outside interest and the Hollywood and all that, but this is still someone who, when you're around him, and the team is losing, you feel it. There's a real shadow around, you know, he'll cast over the organization if it's not going well. And you're talking about a team where they're trying to develop young players and create a positive culture. That's where I wonder, is there impetus to get the Kawhi deal done now? You don't want to start his tenure off in L.A. as a sixth seed or whatever it might be. And that's because I know that logically you'd say, well, wait, right? You don't need to give up anything for him in a year, but you might be sacrificing kind of his start.
I offered up to start the show. Lee Jenkins of Sports Illustrated does an incredible job covering the NBA, joining us, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. I offered up that maybe the missing part of the Warriors adding DeMarcus Cousins discussion is, this is the second time Kevin Durant, though it's not huge amounts of money to him, he's taken less money in order to make it work. Here's Durant, a guy, here's Durant who won MVP in Oklahoma City, obviously left a really good team, had been to the finals once, and all he's done is take less money, two different contracts, win two finals MVPs, win two championships. It kind of feels like that part's getting undersold as part of the deal.
Yeah, I'd undersell it too. I understand that that's been the net result of this deal, and it's a great storyline. I do think he really wants the flexibility, and I think he will. It's hard for me to believe that he won't at least take a look around next year. Even if they win the championship again, even if he has one big finals game or wins finals MVP, at some point I think that he may want to go somewhere and front a franchise again. I mean, there were some moments this season there that there were people around Golden State and even within that team who wondered if he would be back. So I also think he wanted to leave himself a little bit of flexibility.
No, I get that. But tell me the other guy who's taking less money.
They'd have preferred if he'd signed longer, I'm sure. And even if they didn't have the money for DeMarcus Cousins.
Lee Jenkins joining us.
But you're right. The end result is he has given them. It's kind of a... It's worked both ways for him, right? He's been able to preserve his flexibility and help the team. So
right, they got. I mean, I don't know if they would have gotten the Iguodala deal done, or the Livingston deal done, or this deal's done. What about the Boogie Cousins thing? I know NBA Twitter went crazy, but the fact is, he has been a problem wherever he's been. Mm-hmm. He is coming off an Achilles tendon injury, and this is one of the few places to which they don't need him for most of the regular season. They need him for the playoffs.
Right.
It feels like this was the only choice for a bunch of reasons. How are NBA people really reacting to the news today?
Well, I think players are probably reacting with more doom and terror because it's Boogie Cousins. There's still a ton of respect for him as far as the overall talent. And you just think about five all-stars on the floor. You know, probably people who are more behind the scenes, more analytically based, yeah, they'll wonder about fit and overlap, and if he is, given that he's coming off an Achilles, we all know how damaging that injury can be. Will it prohibit him from playing their style, the way that they like to play it? So all of those are, the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle, but it's still a tremendous talent, and it's the one position where they're always vulnerable, and now you're adding a guy who think of their second unit. Even if they just kind of play through him when Curry's sitting or Durant's sitting, there's never a break. I mean, there was never a break against them anyway, but on the offensive end, it gives them another toy to play with.
What do you think happens with Kawhi?
You know, I think that situation is so tricky because of his reluctance to communicate just in general. And so we're going to have to figure out, the Spurs are going to have to figure out how he really feels about Philly and Boston. Because if he is adamant that he will not re-sign there, or if he sends that message, and he rarely, and this is kind of the issue with him, is he rarely sends verbal messages. He'll rarely sort of speak up about what his actual desires are. A lot of it's sort of hard to interpret, or it comes from behind the scenes with him. But to me, that's the huge question. If he's willing to at least give those teams a shot, well, then this becomes, you know, the Spurs can drag this out. They can look for leverage. They'll have leverage with the Lakers. If he won't, then I feel like you have to go ahead and just make the deal with the Lakers now. And But I'm curious with the Lakers is it only going to take one of those core guys, like Ingram or Kuzma, or will it take two? And that's a question I haven't really been able to get a straight answer on.
I don't think they'll give up two. I don't think
they do it.
I think they would give up two players. I don't think they would give up two core guys. Although,
you think like Hart?
Yeah, like Josh Hart would be one that they wouldn't want to give up, but they might.
They would, right.
Ingram, they probably would. Remember, Ingram's was drafted by a different regime. And as much as they like him, I'm not sure they love him. They love Kuzma, especially for what they're going to need with LeBron and if they have Kawhi. So I think the whole that part is fascinating.
Well, that's right. They need shooting, and those two guys at least can shoot. You know, if you're in a Ball and LeBron, right? I mean, you know it better than I do. It seems like the units LeBron's on that really succeed are the ones with a lot of shooting. They're ones with guys just like Ingram and Kuzma, really.
Right. More veteran guys, though. But yes, he wants shooting so that he has the space because, you know, one guy can't keep him out of the lane or keep him from the rim, right? So that's which is interesting because they went out and got JaVale McGee and Rondo, who probably aren't starters, but also aren't guys that stretch the floor in any way.
What do you think of that? Like, just as far as the team dynamics, I mean, they gave those young guys a lot of leash, a lot of confidence, and now it seems like they're squeezing them. They're getting guys who may squeeze them, who at least will push them in practice in a way that, you know, may be uncomfortable at times. Like, where do you fall on what the right thing to do is developing kind of young potential stars?
I don't mind it because I think what I've been told is, hey, they want guys that are high basketball IQ, really good basketball players, can do everything, guard multiple positions, play multiple positions, but they also know that they want to have guys that are just dogs, competitors. And I think all three of them, JaVale probably not as competitive as the other two, but Lance Stephenson, Rondo, if there's a flaw, it's probably in that they're too competitive. Neither is a great shooter, but seriously competitive at both ends of the floor, and I think LeBron will be drawn to that. Do they need more shooting? Yeah, they do need more shooting. They drafted two shooters, but they're just rookies. But I would say that's kind of the working philosophy is that they want to use this first year to find out who's got that kind of inner toughness, so that by year two, when they add another piece or two pieces, that they already know who's who and what's what, and they get rid of the guys that don't have it. That seems to be my working theory.
I mean, it's kind of an old-fashioned approach, isn't it? Like, to bring in Rondo, I don't know that Rondo's going to be, and maybe he will, maybe he'll mentor him. I mean, obviously, Jrue Holiday thrived alongside Rondo, but it seems like they're bringing him in to push Ball, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, listen, Ball, whatever they say publicly, I mean, he only played 52 games. He hurt his knee then. He hurt his knee now. He didn't shoot it well. He works hard. They'd like him to work harder. What better way to get him going than a guy who could start in a pinch? Truth be told, Rondo should be a really good bench guard who can play and who can start in a big spot. And I don't think Lonzo Ball plays every game next year. But 52 games is not enough. Not enough.
Yeah.
All right. What about Houston? They were so close. And I know they re-signed Chris Paul, but losing Ariza... And I think they'll keep Capella, but they might not. Feels like they've lost a little momentum.
I would think they would keep Capella. No, they have lost momentum. Ariza, I think it's easier for people to kind of look at the shooting stats in that last game and think, oh, that's okay. But there's a pretty big drop-off. I mean, as far as a 3-and-D wing, the kind of player that really made Houston what it was, which was a very credible defensive team, a guy who could shoot, a guy who kind of helped that locker room, I think, had great history with Chris Paul. Yeah, it's a big loss, and I'm kind of surprised that they let it happen. I don't think they'll let Capella get away, but clearly the Warriors have only solidified their standing between, and Boogie's part of it, but I think I'd argue that the Ariza loss may in some ways be a bigger boon to the Warriors than the Cousins gain. That might be, I don't know, maybe that's too much.
No, I agree with you. He did a great job on Kevin. They're going to have to beat Kevin Durant.
Yep.
In order to win a championship, and Ariza was one of the few guys that seemed to do a great job on Kevin Durant, and he's won an NBA championship before, so he's been there. He just had one terrible shooting game when they couldn't afford to have him have that terrible shooting game.
You think if he makes shots in that game, you think they hold on to him? Like, do you think it's that paper thin?
I don't think so. I just don't know. I don't know where they are with. I guess I'm torn, right? If you're going to pay $2.5 billion for a team, who cares about paying some money in luxury tax, right? But it does feel like that they may have thought that missing shots was a sign that he was getting closer to over the hill. But right. I don't know. Like, yeah, I mean, look, if you win that game, it's really hard to not bring everybody back, right?
Right. Well, yeah, because you're right. You're into the finals. No, I know. I just wonder if it. And look, it's a new owner. You never know. I think probably people can think one way about an owner, and he might have, it seems like, all the money in the world, and then he gets in there and doesn't necessarily operate the basketball team the same way. I mean, it's hard to jump to conclusions on that. We'll see with Capella. I just cannot imagine them letting Capella go. I mean, he's everything for D'Antoni in terms of the screening and the rolling. And I mean, that guy plays, he plays as hard as any big in the NBA. I just can't imagine them letting him slide.
As of today, am I crazy to think if you gave me Celtics and Warriors or the field, I would take Celtics and Warriors?
Or the field, wow. Yeah, I guess the only other team that would be a threat there would be Philly. No, I think you're right. I think that sounds right. I do think it'll be interesting in Boston. I mean, this will be a different... Obviously, it's a challenge everybody wants, but just when you have this many good players having to sort it out, this many guys who were able to assert themselves last year when Hayward and Irving were out, and now are going to have to take more diminished roles, like finding a way to keep all of those guys happy. And look, Brad Stevens has found a way to do pretty much everything there, so I'm sure clearly it's a luxury, but I do think they have... Yes, you hear some NBA teams say sometimes, you know, too many good players. You know, when you don't have those kind of elite ones, but you have a lot of good players, that can kind of present its own string of challenges. But
Lee, great stuff. Excellent work on the LeBron piece yet again. Can't wait to read what you got for us next at Sports Illustrated. The great Lee Jenkins. Lee, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it, man.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
Terrell Owens is going to speak during the day in which he's going to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Wow, this is a 180. Well, not exactly. Not exactly. Terrell Owens is going to give a Hall of Fame speech at UT Chat. That's University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, on August 4th. He announced that earlier today. Quote, after giving it much thought, I have realized how much I want to celebrate what will inevitably be the best weekend of my life at a place that means so much to me. He will not attend the Hall of Fame enshrinement in Canton, Ohio. It also should be pointed out this event is free. It's open to the public. It starts at 3:17 p.m. In other words, Terrell Owens is going to be doing exactly what he would have been doing in Canton, Ohio, at exactly the same time as others are in Canton, Ohio, which proves the exact reason that Terrell Owens is mad is the reason that he should be mad, because they should do exactly what they've done. They should have done it longer. T.O. wasn't in the Hall of Fame, and all anybody could say is, well, look at the numbers. But when did football ever become about numbers? When was it ever about numbers? A great football player was about championships and also about, like, the definition of pornography, right? You know it when you see it. That's the definition of a great football player. There aren't any numbers that you can point to. There just aren't. Is Jerry Rice the GOAT because of the numbers? Yeah. But it's also because of the Super Bowls, the big catches, and the way in which he played. Terrell Owens' big defense was, look at the numbers. But remember, he was the first of his kind. He was the first of the new generation of wide receivers catching way more balls, being the focal point and catching, you know, being thrown to 10 to 20 times a game. When the rules change, he benefited directly. But he is the Dwight Howard of the NFL. Dwight Howard's the same spot. Based upon the numbers, Dwight Howard is a Hall of Famer. But when Dwight Howard's time to be in the Hall of Fame comes up, somebody's going to sit there and go like, wait a second. He blew up the Magic. He blew up the Lakers. He blew up the Rockets. He blew up the Hawks. He blew up the Hornets. All were better teams before he arrived. And the only one that was different was Orlando, to which he saw their rise and their fall. Eight-time All-Star, five-time first-team All-NBA, one-time second-team All-NBA, two-time third-team All-NBA. And I know All-NBA teams sometimes comes down to position, but he was the best center in the Eastern Conference for almost a decade. He's currently out of work, but he's absolutely based upon five-time rebounding leader, two-time blocks leader. He's absolutely a Hall of Famer in comparison to Reggie Miller and Dominique Wilkins and even Tracy McGrady. But how many teams does he have to blow up before you go like, hey, maybe it's not just the team, maybe it's him. What about T.O.? The Niners thing went up in smoke. The Eagles thing went up in smoke. He was doing, you know, sit-ups and curls in the driveway. The Cowboys thing, the Bills thing, even now as he shows he can run a sub 4.5 40 at a man his age, it only proves why he's not in the league is the same reason he shouldn't be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Has nothing to do with numbers. Any guy who thinks, you know what, I'm going to do a speech the same day as the Pro Football Hall of Fame, at the same time that somebody else is going to be doing a speech, and thinks that's in any way acceptable, doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. Don't belong in. It's the most T.O. move ever. I'm going to speak at the same time I would be speaking up there, only I'm going to do it like on a closed circuit thing at my college in a look at me. And the wide receivers play look at me when they get the ball, look at me when I need a penalty, look at me that I got both 2 feet in, look at me when I celebrate scoring a touchdown. Football is a team game. And it wasn't like he wanted to do a celebration of all of his teammates. He wanted to do a celebration of himself, but he wanted to do it to cast a shadow over that of the NFL, who all they would have done was promote Terrell Owens as a Hall of Famer. The ceremony is about the class of players who emote class themselves. And this, by trying to overshadow or operate his own kind of ceremony, he's showing a lack of class and respect for the guys that are in his class. I'd have no problem if they replaced him. Said he's not a Hall of Famer, moved on. Like, what, you're mad about not getting in? Okay. You can count on less than, you know, you don't need many fingers to count wide receivers that got in their first possible opportunity.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Troy Lovullo, who's the manager of the first place in the NL West, Arizona Diamondbacks. Did you know Snitker before he became skipper of the Braves?
I did. I sure did. And he, I managed against him when he was a manager in Richmond, probably in 2008, 9-ish, and
uh-oh. Uh-oh, we got to make an adjustment here. We've been waiting on Troy Lovullo. We don't want to let his cell phone let us down. You want to, music, you want to make an adjustment there and ask him to make sure we get to a place where he has as many bars as possible? All right, good. That's what he's doing. Troy Lovullo is too good. The NL Manager of the Year can't be on a bad cell phone. That just can't do that. That can't happen. All right, we'll effort for him. We'll find out. Zach Greinke coming in trying to stabilize the Diamondbacks. They're in a 4-game losing streak. All right, he's in the car. You got us on Bluetooth, though, right?
I do. I sure do. Amazing technology, right?
No. Absolutely. There's a bunch of... What was the conversation like between you and Yadier Molina? Last time you met up with the Cardinals, I know there's a shouting match. How'd you handle that at batting practice?
Yeah, you know, the contents in which were discussed, I'd just rather keep between Yachty and I. But, you know, look, I made a mistake. I you know, used some forceful language. Wasn't necessarily directly to him, but I referred to him in a way that was a little too aggressive. And I felt like I needed to just make sure that I let him know that I made that mistake. So, you know, he's the best catcher, one of the best catchers in the National League, and I just felt like it was more happenstance. I saw him there. I felt like it was the right thing to do.
All right, so you didn't go to Matheny and clear with him, like, hey, I'm going to talk? Because, you know, some guys be like, don't talk to my guy. Don't talk. You didn't have to clear with Matheny, did you?
No, I did not. I took it upon myself. I just didn't want to miss that opportunity. And it's been some time, and I felt like the emotions were removed from it, and it kind of gone away, but it was something that I felt like I needed to take care of. And, you know, if Mike ever wanted to talk to one of my players in the same situation, I would not get in the way. But, like I said, I just felt it was the right thing to do.
How would you characterize the state? I know you guys lost four in a row. You got swept by the Giants, who are sitting there 2.5 back. We talked with Dave Roberts yesterday about their resurgence. Of course, they're getting healthy. But look, it's not like you guys have been playing bad. You know, you go back before the losing streak, and I think you'd won 7 out of 8. How would you characterize the state of your team today?
Well, I feel like we're the same team that we were when we returned from a really good road trip, and things have not changed whatsoever. That's one of the characteristics that we walk around with every day. I think that we're tough, we're resilient, and in times like this, we walked through a really tough May, and I think we learned a little bit. We learned a lot about ourselves, and we got stronger and kept together, and became even a more cohesive unit. So times like this, I feel like we have something that we can reference and go to, and know that these guys are ready to go today. And nothing changes. That's the beauty of this team. They accept winning and losing. They know what they have to do on days where things have not gone well. They adjust and get ready for the next day. And much in the same, when we win or get on a nice streak, they don't let it go to their head. So we're somewhere in the middle between really good or really bad, and that's the beauty of this team. They're very consistent every single day.
And you get AJ back. You get your center fielder back. I mean, that's just kind of in the nick of time. AJ back, Greinke on the hill. Seems like that's AJ being back is a huge thing for this team in this to end this losing streak.
I agree. And he was the April player of the month in the National League. So that should tell you what type of caliber of player we're getting back. And you know, last night was his first night back, but just feeling him in the clubhouse, his presence in the clubhouse, being able to pencil in his name to the starting lineup, it was very refreshing. And, you know, you hit on another guy, and Zach Greinke, he's been so consistent and so good for us, and he takes the mound, he gives us a great chance to win every fifth day, and that's what you want your ace to do. He's a guy that we build our staff around, he accepts our responsibility, and he executes a great game plan. So, you know, we're gonna digest what happened yesterday and let that go and come out today and give it our best effort.
Look, Nick has been good at shortstop, but there's a potential shortstop that's out there available. Can't mention any names. what's it like to know that there's a possibility of making a big addition? How do you handle that on a daily basis? You have to manage the egos of men. You have to encourage them. Right. You know the chatter right. about the potential to bring somebody in. How do you manage that, Torrey?
Well, you know, I think these guys understand that this is what the game's all about. And one day you can be sitting next to somebody in the clubhouse and the next day they're gone in another organization. That's accepted in the norm in the sports world, and it's very, very unfortunate. But the one part of that whole equation is our front office every single day, whether we make a trade at the trade deadline or whether we do it now or at the beginning of the season or in the off season. Our front office is always searching for ways to make us better. So, yes, we're aware of potential trades. We hear things just like everybody else, and it's great. It's great that, you know, everybody has a say in what's going on, but I have the total faith in what our front office does every single day because I get a chance to watch them work, and I know how hard they do their how hard they work at their job and never let down. So if something is there to make us look better, I know they're not going to hesitate to make that move.
The 2017 NL Manager of the Year, Torrey Lavullo, joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. You're a native of SoCal, Santa Monica to UCLA, but you, when you grew up, didn't you go to John Wooden's camp, his basketball camp?
I sure did. I'm a proud Southern California boy, and I went to UCLA, and I'm so proud of my association and to that school. And John Wooden, you know, he built such a great legacy there. So obviously, there's a huge attachment to me, the school, and John Wooden.
Okay, so but no, did you go to his camp when he was a kid? Was that at Cal Lutheran? Was that UCLA? I went to his camp. It was at Cal Lutheran. I'm wondering which one you went to.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. No, I went to the one at Pepperdine. I think I went for two consecutive summers. And yes, I'm going to stand firm that it was Pepperdine University both times.
All right. So the story I heard was story. He made an example of you in front of the whole camp. Is that accurate?
He did, but he had such a gentle way about him. He called me over. I'd actually been tying my shoes probably a couple times, as young kids do that. He called me over after the second time, and obviously I must have been just like running the court because I stood out, right? I mean, I was the guy. And he said to me, he called me over and said, you know, I just want to give you a heads up that every time you stop to tie your shoes, that your opposition is getting an edge and getting rest, and your teammate is playing, or your team is playing one man down. He goes, double knot your shoes, and don't ever let that happen again. So to this day, I double knot my shoes. It's just a habit that I developed from that day forward.
That's pretty cool. Tori Lavolo joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Do you use the be quick but don't hurry? I use that with my son. Do you use that? Is that a woodenism, or is there any other woodenisms you use?
You know what? You hit the big one right on the head. And my father, throughout my entire upbringing, used that exact saying. And I didn't know where it came from, but I used to hear it, probably heard it 1,000 times. Be quick, don't hurry, Tori. Be quick, don't hurry. And you know, fast forward until, you know, I go to college and I start really getting into the John Wooden. You can see this quote, this famous quote, be quick, don't hurry. So I realized that I was at UCLA and I felt that presence, but I knew that my dad had been using this line on me my entire life. So it's a great line. It says it perfectly.
Okay. I got to figure out what happened with Goldie, right? He was, I mean, seven home runs through the first 3 months of the season. I know you barely play in March, but then just exploded in June. I mean, exploded, and it's continued on here in July. Did he change something after? I mean, he hit 144 in the month of May. Here's a perennial all-star. Based on the numbers, this guy should be in Cooperstown when he's finished if he continues at this pace. What did he do to get things right?
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I'm a huge Paul Goldschmidt fan, and you're right. I think when this is all said and done, he's going to have some huge numbers at the end of his career, and I feel that strongly about him as well. But I feel like, you know, every player can go through slumps, and superstars are not exempt from that. They have the same emotions, the same feelings, and the same swing mechanical breakdowns as a young player in the minor league. So I think he just was probably showing a lot of hustle, a lot of hurry to his swing in the month of May, where he was making some mistakes. And when he would get a good pitch to hit, unfortunately, he would foul it off or he wouldn't put it in play. And then, you know, as you turn the calendar from one month to the next, even though it's still the same game and it's still the next day, it's like being on the front nine and turning the page and being on the and starting your second half of your round on the back nine. You just kind of refresh, turn the calendar, turn the month over, and on June the 1st, things seem to really, really turn over for him, and he's been a great hitter ever since.
You know, there was one thing I was looking at Goldie and trying to figure things out. He hits over 500 on 3-1 counts. Now, he's only seen nine of them all year, but he hit two home runs. And I know, like, look, he walked 11 times as well. So do you green light him? Does he green light everything? How does it work with a guy of his skill set and his success level, 3-1 count? Who makes the call?
Well, no, he does. I mean, that's a hitter's count. Everybody lives for the 3-1 count. And to be honest with you, when guys get a 3-0 count, I turn them loose and let them make the decision. I basically know the guys who I'm going to pull back from, or the guys that are going to automatically take 3-0. But 3-1, you work so hard to get to that count. Goldie's going to fire away and probably not miss on a 3-1 count. But that's good information right there. You're right. All good hitters should be driving the ball. All good hitters should be not missing and squaring up a ball with a 3-1 count. That's the one that you're working hard to get to. And I think during that month of May, he probably got into some good hitters counts, 2-0, 1-0, 3-0, and he wasn't necessarily firing and putting the barrel on the ball, but now he is, and that's been the big difference.
Well, let's see if you can get things turned around tonight. Obviously, it helps when you got Greinke on the hill at home at Chase Field. I know you're driving to... I know you're driving to work. A couple nights ago, DeAndre Ayton threw out the first pitch, and when he when he walked up there, you're like, the last dude that tall to be thrown on that hill was left-handed with a mustache and a mullet. There had to be a curiosity, like, I want to see what this guy does. Did you know he'd never thrown a baseball before that?
I was aware of that. That was pretty impressive, and he threw a ball that was pretty close to the strike zone. So yeah, I saw that, and he was a very imposing figure. When you stood next to him, you cannot imagine how big this man is. It's pretty impressive knowing that he's as agile as he is, and he can pick up a baseball for the first time and throw a strike. That should tell you something about his ability.
You know, I had this deep conversation with a couple of people about why there's so much more power pitching in baseball now, as opposed, you know, with the steroids out of the game, or mostly out of the game. And the consensus from baseball guy was, hey, nowadays, look at the Yankees starting pitchers, and they're all, you know, 6'3" to 6'7", 6'8". Whereas back in the day, those guys were a first baseman or a catcher. There was the thought that they were too big to be pitchers. Pitchers were smaller. Is that the reason that power pitching? What's the logic behind why there's so much more power pitching in baseball?
Well, that's a good question. Obviously, 20 years ago, when I can reference it and remember playing, guys, you know, threw 90, 91, and that seemed to be about the average. And then all of a sudden it jumped up to, you know, 94, 95, and that's pretty consistent. You see really good arms coming out of the bullpen. You see good starting pitching. I think that baseball has become very specific, and these athletes, when they're younger, they get very point-specific. The muscles that they need to train, get the proper range of motion, and there's a science to it now. Back, several years ago, I'm sure somebody just picked up a baseball in their backyard, started throwing. If they had good arm strength, they continued to improve that as they got more innings. But these kids now today can really start to generate some arm and some good power. They're 14 or 15 years old, and then they begin to work on that, fine-tune that, and get very specific. So by the time they're in high school or maybe college, they're throwing 90 miles an hour, and they get into pro ball, and they get on a program, and it continues to upgrade. So it's amazing. The velocity that you see now is something that I never would have predicted. It's a pretty impressive feat when you see an entire bullpen throwing 94, 95 miles an hour.
Well, Zach was dialed in last time around. I think 73 out of 103 were strikes. We'll see if he has the same efficiency tonight. Best of luck against the Cardinals, and thanks so much for your time.
Okay, Doug. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, it's Terry Lavola, Tori is the manager of the year last year in the National League. They're in first place, a little bit of a losing streak, joining us on the way to the yard here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.